You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 225. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile. Hi, John.
Hey, Adam. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It feels like it's been a while. Has it been a while?
It has been a while, because we recorded, I guess, before Thanksgiving break with Ricky. Yep. And this is a very interesting conversation. It's been a while, man. I saw the dwarves. I saw bad canoes. I saw Guar. So I had a pretty good time since our last break.
I have no concept of when your Thanksgiving is, so that means nothing to me. So also joining us on tonight's show, out of Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky Frankel.
Yep. How's it going, guys? Actually, I also had a good... I also saw Off.
Damn, how was Off?
On Sunday at the Echo. It was awesome. It was so cool. Keith was just on his A game. The whole place went nuts. It was great.
All right, okay. And we have one of your, I guess, I don't know what you call people from your city, fellow Los Angelinos.
Los Angelinos.
Los Angelinos, is that right?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
So, yeah, okay, that's where we're just going to go with that. I don't know what people call it anyway. We have Denise from Punk Worldviews on. Denise, hi.
Hello.
For our listenership, all 20 of them, if they don't know about your site or what you do, can you give a little spiel?
I sure can. I started Punk Worldviews back in 2008, so it's been... couple years now, but it's pretty much just a website of music reviews, video interviews, live video, photos, just pretty much. I know there's a lot of other websites like mine, but I definitely think mine's the coolest. So, but yeah, it's just pretty much shows, like mostly punk and hardcore and metal, and then pretty much whatever I want, though. I'll throw in like a weird acoustic show or something in there every once in a while.
All right, cool. Well, yeah. Thanks for joining us.
So, thanks for having me.
We are going to talk about some of the stuff that happened in the past week that that people seem to react to on Punk News, and we're going to see where we go from there. The first story that we have, I'm not even sure how exactly to tackle this one, because there's the story itself, and then there's the rebuttal to the story, and then there's the... I don't know, the kind of hard truth about the story that came out. So I can do my best to summarize this without having to read three lengthy articles on the show. So there is an indie duo called Pomplamoose that was out on tour, and they decided to tour with a six-piece band, I think, and they had a big stage show and all this stuff, and they put their full expenses of touring out in a post on Medium and explaining that, you know, it's a tough life out there being an independent musician, because you have to spend all this money on hotel rooms and light shows and all this crazy stuff, and then you end up in the hole even after your merch sales and everything. So they posted this article, and this article kind of went everywhere. This isn't a band that we normally talk about, or at least in my case, one that I've ever even heard of before this story came up. So this went out there, and it was initially something that seemed to make some waves because it was, a sob story about what it's like to be a touring musician. Then the rebuttals started to come in, particularly because a lot of the things that the band spent money on, I think a lot of the kind of punk bands or the smaller bands that we talk about on Punk News I don't think they'd ever even think of spending that kind of money on that stuff, and they tend to go without it. So there is a post that went up on Noisy by... what's his name from Direct Hit here? Nick Woods. Woods from Direct Hit, where he detailed some of his band's expenses when they've been on tour and talked a little bit about some of the things that they do to not, for example, spend money on Best Western quality hotel rooms and stuff like that. So you can go to Noisy and check that out, which is a good rebuttal. But then there was a third rebuttal. You can find a link to this over on, I think, Ox TV posted it. Where if you take a careful reading of the Pomplamoose guy's story, he goes in and he says, you know, how much money they lost via all their expenses, but don't feel bad for them because they're still okay due to how much money they're making from fan support on Patreon. And that's all well and good, and a lot of bands do that, but this is actually one of the guys that owns Patreon. So it's something that we're looking at now really in the light of it being basically a very glorified piece of viral marketing for Patreon. I don't know how to approach this because there's probably a valid point we could be talking about here, which is that it costs money to tour and how do you save money doing that. But there's also something we could talk about here where, like, was this sort of a scumbaggy thing to do? So I don't know which angle you want to take on this, John. I'll just throw it to you.
All right. First of all, I'm sick of the punk rock attitude that bands should always be broke all the time. And you shouldn't make money off being a touring band. You know, we had Scotty from Tank Crimes on a little while ago, and he talked about how metal bands make money on the road and punk bands lose money on the road. We need to get out of this mentality that a show should only cost $5 or $6 or $7. The result is you get a bunch of bands that are broke all the time and can't subsist and end up breaking up. And that's why Classics of Love is broken up. So we need to get out of this mentality that bands should be broke all the time and that bands should have to, you know, sleep five people, you know, in, you know, the YMCA together in the same bed just to make it on tour, you know. That being said, this Pomplamoose story was decadent in that, you know, you got the staying at nice hotels every night. They got a $100,000 light show or $10,000 light show. You don't need all that crap. Although, I mean, maybe it makes interesting art. My point is the following, is there's a happy medium. The punk rockers, they demand too low of a door fee for anybody to make any money whatsoever. And the reason is because a lot of punk rockers are scared. And I blame Crass. I'm a gigantic Crass fan. But it's all Crass's fault. It's Crass's fault in that the concept that art and money can exist simultaneously. And actually, Penny Rimbaud might agree with me on this because I interviewed him about it. And we talked about this exact subject. But the point is the following. Is that just because you're making money doesn't mean your art can't be pure. And so you need to work towards, as listeners and as bands, we need to work towards making our artists sustainable for what they want to do and what we want to hear them do. And that, you know, demanding a $5 or $6 or $7 cover fee or demanding that bands break even and using their albums as lost leaders to see their live show is a self-destructive mentality. And that's why so many punk rock bands can't make any money. Related, it turns out it was all a scam. The whole thing was an advertisement for Patreon. The guy in his article said, "We wouldn't have been able to do it unless it was for Patreon." Turns out the guy is a co-owner of Patreon. I feel abused. I feel scammed. So I say, boo to Pomplamoose. The band sucks. They really do. This was an underhanded, cheap, you know, dishonest thing to do. And it's whack.
Well, there you go. Ricky, Denise, you guys, what do you think about this?
I mean, I did not know it was a scam, you know, as most people, I guess, when I first read the article, but, I was a little turned off by it. I thought that they shouldn't be complaining about losing money if they were doing all those unnecessary things, you know, the hotels, the light shows and all that. But then when I kind of read that it was a scam, it really put a bad taste in my mouth, honestly. Like I'm all for, you know, like marketing or, you know, doing crazy things to get something to go viral, you know, to make money or whatever. But that was just, it's like tricking people in not a good way. Like it wasn't funny or, you know, it wasn't innocent, I guess is the word. It just seemed malicious and like, I don't know, like they're just playing on everyone's gullibility. Is that a word? I don't know. Gullibleness, I guess, that, you know, like they know that bands tour and lose money and it's like the sob story, but then it's like, oh, just kidding. You guys just made me more money now because my company is, you know, more known. So I didn't like it personally.
Go ahead.
No, you can go, Ricky. I don't want to monopolize things.
All right. When I first saw this, I'm just thinking, like, who is this band? And I was thinking the whole time, like, I've never heard of them, and why are they popular all of a sudden? So I was a little skeptical of the whole thing. And then, I mean, the bands we talk about a lot on here and just the punk scene, I think are they an indie band?
Pappelmus? Yeah, they're an indie
band. Yeah, they're an indie band. I mean, what band do we know that spends over $5,000 on insurance? Almost most of them don't. Like, and then they talk about band salaries, and I'm just and how that's like close to 50 grand. So I was just wondering, like, where is this going? And then I was really happy to see, not only because I'm a huge fan of Direct Hit, but Nick Woods, I think, hit it out of the park with a rebuttal. And then I got to tell you, with viral marketing and the culture we have today online, I wasn't completely surprised that this was kind of a scam. So that's where I fell into this.
I was scammed. I fell for a hook, line, and sinker. I thought it was just a bunch of two knuckleheads that didn't realize how good they've got it. And then it turns out it was a scam. I mean, I fell for it.
Yeah, I did too. And you know what? I don't. I hate to. I actually very much support, out of what I've seen, the. What kind of like a service like Patreon can do for like online content creators. And there's a lot of people I know, podcasters in particular, that have actually been using it to support their, you know, doing what they do. We mentioned it on the show during the Giangameshi episode that we had, but like the Canada Land podcast that broke that story, it only exists as a person's job because it's funded through Patreon. So like, I don't see why a service that seems to have had a lot of positive press and a lot of people that like it needed this kind of boost, or at least this kind of like attempted, I don't know, viral whatever. So yeah, that kind of sucks. It's funny because I've thought every once in a while I'll fantasize about like, you know what, we should use Patreon to raise some money for the Punk News podcast so we can buy mics that don't suck. But then if all 20 of our listeners each gave us like a dollar, we would have $20, and that doesn't really get us anything. So it's not something I've executed, but
I take that $20 and I buy a rare
and you put it all on black.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, so I don't know. I still kind of like Patreon, but this gives me some pause because I don't know why the guy had to do this. But anyways, so there you go. That's the first and last time anyone's ever going to talk about Pomplamoose on the Punk News podcast.
but here's a band that we're going to talk about much more than we've talked about in the past. Bad Cop, Bad Cop. They've got a new album coming out. We don't know what it's going to be called, but it's going to be out in April 2015 via Fat Records. The band last released the EP called Boss Lady, and the Punk News kids were digging it, and I say good to them because this band's kind of kicking. Ricky, are you a fan of the Bad Cop, the Bad Cop?
I reviewed the Bad Cop, that EP, and I happened to see them. I kind of found them by accident. They were opening for Me First and the Gimme Gimmes like in March, and I usually don't pay 100% attention to opening bands. This band totally had the whole crowd, including me, just really kind of floored. I mean, I was really, really impressed. And then I bought the EP immediately, and this is one of my top few albums I'm looking forward to for next year.
Were these guys from somewhere? Like, were any of the members a former member of anything that we should be aware of? I'm just trying to figure out where they came from.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah.
I think they're from. Aren't they from San Pedro or somewhere around there? I don't know, but I think they're awesome.
So yeah, so there's there's not really a ton of story about this aside from the fact that record is coming out. So yeah, that record is coming out. People seem to like it. So there you go.
Yeah, I actually discovered them on that same tour. I was doing a Me First and the Gimme Gimme's interview there, so we had to get there really early because I actually don't usually make it for a lot of the openers. I also was like, I was blown away. Like sometimes the openers are playing and I might not even be in the room. I might still be outside, you know, doing an interview or, you know, putting gear together or whatever. But I did actually shoot them because I heard it was like an inaugural band and I was like, okay, you know, like, could be more interesting pictures than a bunch of dudes, which is what I'm normally shooting. So, you know, I shot them, and then I loved it, and I got their record to review as well. And I also am looking forward to this a lot.
Was that at the House of Blues show?
It was.
I was
the
there.
The one in Hollywood. Well, missed connection.
Totally.
You must have not seen my Craigslist ad, so it's okay.
Okay.
That was a missed connection Craigslist joke, if you didn't get it.
Yeah, all right. So,
must be an American thing, sorry.
No, it is. We just don't like Ricky to think that anyone sees him. So, all right. We're going to jump.
Because I'm not an editor.
Yeah. The great six dad was 14-year-old boy. Why were you at this House of Blues show? You're not old enough to get in the door.
I'm 22.
I know. So anyways, we're going to keep going with this. So Xylophone Punkers Crazy in the Brains have announced the details of their new release. The album's going to be called Good Lord. It is due out on December 30th on Baldy Longhair, and they've got pre-orders that they're taking right now. You can find the link for that on the org. So the vinyl EP is going to contain 7 tracks. The cassette version will contain 10 bonus tracks in addition to the 7. And the band's Also, the band released the EP debut single Ice Cream, which you can stream on Bunkies right now. This is the follow-up to the Let Me Go release from 2013. John, Crazy in the Brains is a band that you inject into absolutely everything that we do, whether we want to talk about them or not. So I'll put this to you.
Crazy in the Brains rules. If you're not hit to Crazy in the Brains, you need to get hit to Crazy in the Brains. I love Crazy in the Brains. And the first time I saw this band was at Kung Fu Necktie in Philadelphia, and the show opened with this opening band. I forget what they were called, but they were kind of like a G.G. Allin ripoff band, and the guy, like, put a football helmet on and then, like, suplexed himself onto a chair off the stage and, like, hurt his back. Then the guy gets up and puts, like, a trash can on his head, and he's like, hit me, and he goes up to me, and he goes, hit me, and I didn't, like, really want to hit him, so I just kind of gave him, like, a love tap, like, you know, just like a... And so I didn't hit him. So then he goes up to the Crazy in the Brains guys. He says, take this chair and hit me. So I think it was Brett, the bassist from Crazy in the Brains. He takes the chair and he smashes it on the guy's head, knocks the guy out. The guy falls on the ground. It's the end of the set. So that was the first time I saw Crazy in the Brains. But Crazy in the Brains are a great band, and here's why. They put out, I think, three EPs, a split EP, and a record, here's what I love about Crazy in the Brains. You all know Johnny G loves the mean, the nasty, the macho music. And people say that's all Johnny G loves. But I also like Crazy in the Brains because they're super energetic, they're super wild, but it's not necessarily macho music, but it's energetic, fun, wild music. Crazy in the Brains is everything a fun, well, not even a fun, but is everything a wild, interesting punk band should be. They're fast, and not always. They're not always fast, but they're usually fast. They're wild. They're weird. They're kind of funny. Their songs are varied. And you would think a xylophone on every track would get old, but it just doesn't. Like, every single song is great, and the xylophone doesn't get boring because they change it up. So I got to say, Crazy in the Brains is a band to watch out for in 2015. I'm digging this. I'm super excited for the new album.
I thought the song was actually kind of delightful. I think that outside of the time when they appeared live, actually on the 200th episode of the Punk News podcast, from a, what were they in, like a KFC parking lot?
Oh, that's right. We had them on the Punk News podcast.
Yeah. outside of that, I'd never really encountered them before, and that was probably not the best place to really get a feel for what they're doing. But I thought Ice Cream was really fun. I liked it. So I'm kind of looking forward to this. Does this, since we're in kind of year-end list period here, does the fact that this thing comes out on December 30th completely screw you up?
I'm going to put it on 2015, I think.
I'm going to nix that.
Oh. Well, then I got to make some changes, I guess. But I don't even have this yet, but the lists are due. As the Punk News listeners might know, we always do top 10 or top 20 lists every year. And so there's a lot of debate going on the Punk News echo chamber about the Punk News hovercraft, about who should be number one, who should be number 20. Denise, what records are you digging this year? Not necessarily your top 20, but what records are the jams of the year?
Well, obviously Lagwagon. I am like the biggest Lagwagon fan. I've seen them live a billion times, and I would watch them a billion more. I was so – when I heard they were making a new record, I was so excited because I interviewed – Joey. I've interviewed him a couple of times, but my last one was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I remember at that point they were not planning on writing new stuff. And they, I think they'd just done that. They reissued their first 5 albums. And, you know, they had like some demos, some acoustic versions and whatever, but nothing new. And that's why, you know, in the interview, I asked him, like, you guys are reissuing this, but when's the new stuff coming? And he tried to, I think that maybe they knew, but he was trying to make us, they weren't allowed to talk about it, I think. But yeah, so I was all thinking that they weren't going to. And then when I heard the news, I was like, you know, can I swear?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Cause I swear a lot. Very fucking excited, I guess. But so that definitely is, I hate to, I guess, spoil alert, but it's probably going to be my number one. But I think that's fairly obvious too, to anybody who knows me or knows, you know, what my top 10 lists are normally like. Because I also do put top 10 lists out for Punk World Views. I don't have a deadline. So, you know, since I am, I guess, the end all of the website, I have the last say in everything. You know, I wouldn't, if an album came out on the 30th, I would still include it in my 2014 list. So yeah, but Lagwagon is definitely the one that sticks out the most. I wrote down, cause I've been compiling my top 10 list slowly throughout the year. So I'm trying to get to it. It's loading at the moment. I want to say, Lawrence Arms is up there as well. Hold on here. Oh, here we are. Sorry. It's this damn Skype call. It's slowing down my internet.
Well, Denise, what do you think of Crazy in the Brains? Are you down with Crazy in the Brains?
You know, don't hate me, John, but yeah, I was up, so man. Not
shut,
into it.
Get off my podcast. What didn't you like about it? What's wrong with you?
It just wasn't my...
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Okay, you know... It just wasn't my jam. It just, you know, I'm listening because I did listen to it. I listened to the Ice Cream song that's streaming on Punk News. And I just was like, I can't get into this. I mean, maybe, you know, like you said, their live show is crazy because I'm a very big, you know, proponent of like, I might not like an album, but I could love to see the band live. So mm-hmm. I have never seen that band live. So I'm not going to throw that out the window that maybe I would enjoy that. Live, but I will not be listening to them in my car or anything, I guess. But I did just open up my list. If you're interested in a couple of my other top tens are definitely gonna be the
whatever.
No? Yeah. Oh, John. You are so mad. Sick of It All, one of my favorite bands of all time. And they released the last Act of Defiance album a couple months ago, and that is actually, you know, that might be a close call for number one now that I'm looking at my list. I'm forgetting, but Sick of It All is, I mean, now if you don't like Sick of It All, I'm definitely gonna hurt you, John. So.
Me? I interviewed Sick of It All. I revealed to the world the Sick of It All Black Eyed Peas connection that only I know about, The world knows about.
Okay, I don't know this connection, and I need to know.
You gotta read my interview on punknews.org.
Okay. Okay, I'll look it up when we're done.
All right, well, John, you have any other outrage that you want to express, or you want to keep going on here?
I want to know Ricky's opinion on Crazy in the Brains. We need to bring balance to the force.
Okay, well,
are you making a list or something? Like,
I'm taking John, names, is what I'm doing.
Yeah, I don't want to be blacklisted by John. Let's see.
Fine, whatever. Let's just talk about Chris Farron. Adam, tell me about Chris Farron.
Okay, so Chris Farron.
Go ahead.
Okay, sorry, Ricky. Okay, here's some rope. Hang yourself.
I bought their first album, and I was gonna say I pre-ordered this like an hour ago. So I'm into them. I think
Ricky. Well done.
Thank you.
Please.
Hear me out, to both of you, please. I like this band because they have that kind of folk weirdness that Andrew Jackson Jihad has. Just kind of that like weird in a good way attitude, and I think the xylophone makes them unique. Am I gonna mosh to this band? No, and I don't think they've ever been out past like Philadelphia. So I would see them though, but. Yeah, that's my two cents. So, I'm into them.
That was very decisive, Ricky.
They're friends with Bad Cop, Bad... They actually played L.A. with Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
Oh, I did?
No, they... I'm just saying. It
didn't. Okay.
So anyways, Chris Barron of Fake Problems has released a Christmas album composed of original Christmas songs. It is titled Like a Gift from God or Whatever. The release includes appearances by Mae Whitman of Arrested Development and Parenthood, Laura Stevenson, Jenny Oang Youngs, Allison Weiss, Sean Bonnet of Andrew Jackson Jihad, Jeff Rosenstock of Bombay Music Industry, and that band I can't pronounce, so I'm not going to try, Annika Pyle of Chumped, and more people. So you can... Did I screw that up? I feel like I screwed
no,
that up.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just laughing because you're funny.
Okay, that's good. Anyways, so for every purchase in December, a portion of the proceeds is going to benefit the National Alliance on Mental Illness. So you can find links to buy it and actually stream the whole thing over on Punk News right now. Chris Barron, of course, is a... I don't know what the right word is for here, but he has self-made himself into this weird Twitter celebrity. When Fake Problems hasn't been a touring band, and this is sort of the next stage in the Chris Farron. What am I going for here? What's the
epic,
right word?
Epic.
Epic.
Saga. Legacy.
Anyways, yes, and Chris Farron is also an occasional guest host on this podcast. So hi. So anyways, what do you guys think of this? I got an opinion, but I talk too much. So I'll come around to it later.
Okay, well, I'll go first. Ladies first, right? Just kidding. Anyway, okay, I love Chris Farron. I've been a Fake Problems fan for years and years. I used to, when I lived back in Kentucky, I used to see them live a lot more than when I, now that I live in LA. I don't know why, but that's kind of when I discovered them. They opened up for, I actually can't remember, it was somebody weird, but anyway. But yeah, you know, that I first heard them, seeing them live. So that's a good sign, you know, that I like them. They're good live. I thought Chris was adorable. He's like a little pocket person, which I love. And I do love his Twitter as well. I've noticed throughout, you know, the last couple years, he's exploded for some reason on just being this funny man on Twitter. And that shirt he made, the Smiths, I think it was, right? And it had the picture of
the Smiths.
Will Smith or whatever. Yes, but that obviously did it for him. But the Christmas album... I commend him on doing original songs, for one thing, because I think the Vandals are probably one of the only bands I can think of off the top of my head that have enough Christmas, original Christmas songs to, like, full-on have, you know, Christmas albums, Christmas shows, and I always enjoyed that. And the album title as well, I found very original and funny. So good job, Chris. I will think about refollowing you on Twitter because of the album.
Ooh.
Ooh, I know. And that's my opinion.
John.
Well, I'll tell you, I got to commend Chris Farron. I love bands that do unexpected, weird, and adventurous things. And what's particularly interesting about this is back in the day, back in the 80s, back in the 90s, a Christmas album was the exact nadir of creativity. It's like, well, if you got nothing else to do, let's do a Christmas album. I think of Billy Idol did a Christmas album. And the Stray Cats, what's his name? John Setzer did a Christmas album. So a Christmas album used to be like, well, I've got no creativity left in the gas tank. Let's just do a Christmas album that sells a few units. Chris Farron did the exact opposite of that. He did something weird or unexpected. And what I really like about this is a lot of the songs are weird. Or he's got one song on here called, let's see here, this Chris Farron's Disney Frozen. It's kind of like a lo-fi... It's a kind of like a lo-fi, almost Devo-ish techno track. Some of the other songs are more, you know, shorter. Some of them are more like a classic Chris Farron song. So the whole thing kind of feels like a Guided by Voices album to me. What I would say, though, is I enjoyed it. So much props to Chris Farron for doing something, I want to say, impulsive, flighty, and generally interesting. However, a lot of his tracks sound like Chris Farron tracks where, you know, he sings in that, like, I guess you want to say open, lush voice. And when I say lush, I don't mean drunk. I mean majestic, if you will. And so I kind of want him to venture outside of that comfort zone, because in Fake Problems, in Arcturo Vespucci, in this, he kind of stays in that vocal range. And I want to hear something daring, something scarier, if you will. But anyway, I dug this. Much props to Chris Farron for doing something adventurous. And that really is a boon of the internet, is that, you know, you could not do this 20 years ago. because it costs money to actually put stuff out. But, you know, with GarageBand, with Bandcamp, stuff's so cheap, it's easy to do weird, adventurous stuff. So much props.
Ricky.
Yeah, I thought this was cool. I started laughing so hard at the album cover. I thought that was just such a Chris Farron photo that, I thought it was really funny. For some reason he has that fixation on Frozen. I keep seeing him tweet about it. So I wasn't surprised to see something about it on there, but it was cool. I enjoyed this.
I think that there's a few songs on here that are actually really good. And one of the things that I always liked about Chris was that, or really about Fake Problems in general, has just been that even when they were doing something that was kind of derivative, their songwriting seemed to be a little bit better than I think other bands of their ilk. So even back when like Fake Problems was doing their kind of like folk punky, you know, Post Against Me stuff, there was every once in a while you get a song on there that was just way better constructed than you would think. And the title track on this, I think, is actually really nice. There's a few songs on here that are kind of elevated to that level, and that kept my interest in this, because normally I think I would have any interest in a Christmas album. There's just something about the idea of that, even from bands I like, that I just don't really want to listen to, because I don't want to listen to Christmas music when it's not from bands I like. So it's not something that I need to mix into that. And when Bad Religion released that Christmas album thing that they did last year, I don't even think I've listened to that. And I'm a huge Bad Religion fan. I don't know. There's something about it that just does not make me want to engage. But I liked this. This is actually something that I could see putting on and not being annoyed with it come Christmas. So, yeah. So I don't know. Good for Chris.
So are you saying that you did not buy the Austrian Death Machine Christmas album?
I most certainly did not.
That was the dude from As I Lay Dying, I think. It was his side band. They released a Christmas album, I'm remembering now.
My Christmas music usually involves me like getting the Pogues Fairy Tale New York and putting it on repeat until someone stops me from doing that and putting that back on something that they play in the shopping mall. So yeah. Anyways, Christmas is a thing. Do we have a song?
Yeah, I got a song. This band Janelle sent me, say, John, play our tune on the podcast. So I said, okay, I'll do it. This band is called Janelle.
And that was a fucking great story.
Well, I'm all about the people. If the people want me to play something, I'll play it, you know? And actually, I'm glad you said that. It brings up a bigger point.
What point?
The question is as a Punk News podcast host, as a Punk News news editor, is it my job to curate or is it my job to distribute? That is, should John only play tunes that John digs? Should John only interview bands that John digs? Or should John post, should John play tunes that the people want to hear? And I think everyone knows my opinion, but I'm engaged to Flights of Whimsy. And so this band said, John, play this on the podcast. I said I would. But you can weigh in the debate at podcast@punknews.org. But until then, this track is called So Natural by Janelle, and you can find them on Facebook via Janelle. Let's check it out.
Okay, we're back. We have some Black Flag news that we are going to talk about. And we have some legal news we're going to talk about. Which basically means John is going to talk for the next 45 minutes and I'm going to go get a drink. So, as you may know, Greg Ginn of Black Flag was recently involved in a custody case regarding his children, and that case is still ongoing. Recently, Ron Reyes, who was Black Flag's second lead singer and was fired from the band during the band's 2013 tour, filed an affidavit with the court regarding his experience with Ginn and his observations of Ginn's children. The affidavit states that Ginn has a marijuana dependency, that he is not properly raising his daughters, and that Ginn threatened Ray's families multiple times. So you can read the whole thing linked on Punk News. It's over at Brooklyn Vegan is hosting it, and thank you to Consequence of Sound for actually bringing this to light for us. So yeah, a whole bunch of publications are involved in bringing you this story. So anyways, John, this is squarely in like all of the overlapping circles of your life are in this story. So
yeah, well, first of all, I got that. I called it wrong. If the podcast listeners remember, about three podcasts ago, we talked about when this first cropped up, and I said, well, it's possible that he could be doing all these things, but I'm not necessarily sold, particularly because if you remember, Greg Ginn's wife or Greg Ginn's wife's friend started a Kickstarter to raise money for her, and like it was like, Greg Ginn's a bad guy, Kickstarter, give us money, which I thought was suspicious. Well, I got to say, it looks like Ron Reyes in this it's a hearing is what it is. It's not a trial. It's a hearing. He's filed an affidavit. And you say, what's an affidavit? An affidavit is a statement filed under penalty of perjury used as evidence. And so basically, Greg Ginn's wife or whoever, in trying to get custody of the kids away from Greg Ginn, had Ron Reyes do this affidavit. And basically, in the affidavit, Ron Reyes says he didn't see any physical abuse, but he saw lots of neglect. Ron Reyes was so detailed, I believe Ron Reyes on this. Further, Ron Reyes said that Greg Ginn threatened his family twice, which I kind of believe that too. You know, we don't know till it's proven at trial or in a hearing or whatever, but I believe Ron Reyes on this. And part of it is, I mean, the whole thing is very sad, because if these things are happening to these children, it's very, very sad. But putting that completely aside, I am glad that Ron Reyes is getting his revenge, if you will. I interviewed Ron Reyes when Black Flag first got back together in 2013, and he was a super, super nice guy. I've talked to him a couple of times. He's a super, super nice guy, and he seems pretty believable. And so, if you remember, Ron Reyes was fired from the band, and Mike V of the Rats went all, you know, to Rolling Stone. He went to AV Club. He went on the Black Flag Facebook page and, you know, basically said, you know, the reason the band was bad was because of Ron Reyes. Well, let me tell you that that could not be further from the truth. The only reason to see Black Flag 2013 was for Ron Reyes, because no one really cared. And so now, you know, it's the old, what's the word I'm looking for? It's the old adage, you know, if you stomp on people on your way up, everyone's going to stomp on you on your way down. And, you know, Greg Ginn has been, you know, people have been saying Greg Ginn has been dishonest and cheated them for years and years and years and years. And maybe this might be the point where it all blows up and really comes back to bite him. And that's what it looks like. So I got to say, I feel bad for the kids. I hope they get a better living situation if what everyone is saying is true. And honestly, like I said, I do believe Ron Reyes related is actually Ron Reyes went on the Punk News Facebook and posted a statement to our article, which I'm going to read for you in just a few minutes. But if someone else wants to talk while I find it, feel free. Here it is. I found it. I found it.
Well, huh? We could have had like a period of awkward silence. That would have been totally fitting for what we do normally.
So on Facebook, someone said, I'm not going to read the person's name, but this is someone, just some commenter said, Ron Reyes is a bitter, Ron Reyes is a bitter asshole. That's what he said. So then Ron Reyes replied to him. Let me see if I can find the actual thing. Ron Reyes posted a whole bunch of things, but I'll just read a little bit. He put, people want to make this about music or bitter men or try and discredit people because they can't draw very good or if pot is a drug. Focus, people, this is just about the kids. It should not be news, but everyone loves a train wreck. Sometimes I hate people. I got dragged into this, and believe me, I did not want to get involved in this, but how could I not lend a hand? Would you just shut up and mind your own business just to stay clean when you see this going on around you? So I got to say, in a way, Ron Reyes could have, I mean, this is really none of his business, but I commend him for standing up for what he believes is right. So I support Ron Reyes 100%. Related, if you want to see, he actually did like a really long essay following that. So if you want to go to the Punk News Facebook and look that up, he wrote a whole bunch of whole stuff about addiction and drug use and stuff and all that. So you can check that out.
Yeah, I don't. Does anyone else have anything to chip in on this? I don't really know if there's anything else. Yeah,
I mean personally, I've never been a Greg Ginn fan.
What? What?
Well, what? I'm saying like Denise! the way he's acted. John, if you were here, you'd punch me, I'm sure. I'm just saying, like, when the whole, like, flag versus black flag thing was going on, and it was like, I just felt like the way that he was acting was overreacting. And he was like, I mean, but then again, I don't know the whole story. I don't know, like, what was going on and who wrote what and who owned what and who deserves the name and whatever. You know what I mean? It's just like, I've only ever seen Black Flag with Keith Morris, and so that's all I know. So, I mean, I listened to them obviously growing up with everybody, and I don't know. I just this whole thing though with involving the children, like when I first initially read it, I was like, he's stepping over the line. Like I felt like, and I've always liked Ron Reyes. I feel like he's a good guy, and he's just trying to be honest and do the right thing. But part of me felt like this becoming a big public thing was a little weird. Like I felt like his, you know, kid custody battle should not be a public thing. I don't know. That's just how I feel, I guess.
Well, you know? Realize that Ron Reyes did not make this public. A couple of things is a child custody battle is public unless the court specifically orders it to be sealed. In this case, Ron Reyes did an affidavit, or in California we would call it a declaration. And then it was filed in court. And then what happens is that the gossip sites, they'll actually go through court filings, public court filings, to see if anybody famous did anything. So this came up. So someone put this online.
And are you like a lawyer?
I am a lawyer, yeah. but related, you know, we got a little bit of flack for posting this. I wasn't sure. Honestly, I did a little bit of mental thinking about whether or not we wanted to post this. I'm like, yeah, we should post it because it's all over the internet now. Is this something Punk News should post? I would say it is for a couple of reasons. A, Greg Ginn is an incredibly important musician, so anything that could potentially, I don't know, show if he's a great guy or a really bad guy, that's newsworthy. Second, it gives insight into Ron Reyes' time in the band. Third, everyone else was talking about it, so maybe we should just talk about it too. But I'm open to debate on that, on whether or not we actually should have covered this second half at all, or the first half.
My vote would be that we should, only because of the people that are involved. If this was, and I think that it's really entirely hinges on the fact that it's, you know, well, in this case, two different people from Black Flag that are involved in this story at this point. If this was, I don't know, if this was like the drummer from, someone give me one of these Epitaph bands that we don't know anything about.
God,
Falling in the Verse.
Okay, if this was the drummer from Falling in Verse, I don't know if it's necessarily something that we would cover to any serious degree, like maybe a story, but probably not even that. Definitely not something that we would like chase. But I mean, it's Black Flag, and it's potentially life, you know, altering allegations that are being, you know, put up against Greg Ginn. So yeah, I think it's totally valid that we cover it. It's not a fun story, but not everything that we post has to be, you know, there's a new music video.
Yeah.
But yeah,
hey. I'm cool that we posted it. I mean, it's been a tough year for Greg and for Greg Ginn, and I think the thing is he's brought it all on himself. So, you know, it's not like we're posting Ronnie Radke getting thrown into jail again or anything like that. It's, I mean, this is like a founding member of a really important band. In the punk genre, so I think it's all right. I just I think it's kind of, I mean, you could see Ron Reyes is a good father in that other F Word documentary. I mean, it didn't look, you know, planned or anything the way he was talking with his kids. who knows what would have happened if Greg Ginn was in that documentary. But
maybe I'm, he was and they cut him out.
Or he was too high or whatever. But it, right. Yeah, I think this is fine. And plus, this is just another part in the Black Flag, you know, story, basically. I mean, we've been following them with the flag versus Black Flag thing the whole time. Didn't we have, like, legal documents on the site, too, of that at one point? So I think this is fine.
Whenever anyone complains that we shouldn't post something, I always feel that they're trying to make an argument that that's space that we could be using for something else. But it's a website. We have infinite space. We could put all kinds of stuff on there and still have room for other stuff. So
I get the same kind of flack for posting stuff. And at the end of the day, it's like, whatever. It's, you know what I mean? Like, you post something in a month, it's going to be covered by a million other posts. So it's like... That's what I think, at least.
Well, speaking of happy stories, or at least stories that a lot of people are into, or stories people say we should have posted, The Sidekicks, they've released a new song off their upcoming EP, or LP, rather. The LP is called Runners in the Nerved World. It's due out January 20th on Epitaph Records, and the track is called Jesus Christ Supermalls. You know, this band's been building a long time. I mean, rising in popularity. I remember when I first saw them on their first tour with Bomb the Music Industry in, like, 2008, I think it was, 2009. And since then, they've slowly but surely gotten bigger. Were you guys into this? Is this your kind of jam?
This is going to sound really bad, but when I saw this come up, I had to actually go, like, pull open iTunes and go, like, which band was The Sidekicks again? Oh, okay, they were this band. And I have them mashed into this, like, three or four band amorphous blob of Red Scare acts that I could not mentally pick out without going and looking at the cover art. And I kind of feel like a dick, because when I saw the cover art, I really liked Weight of Air. I think that Weight of Air was probably, it may have been what, either one of my favorite records the year that came out, or at the very least, that was definitely the favorite punk news record the year it came out when you actually tallied up all the votes. So I feel like for some reason this band completely vanished from my mental purview up until now. So anyways, hi, Sidekicks. Welcome back to my brain. Anyways, yeah, so I don't know, this is fun. I like this song. The band seems to be doing they always had some indie rock, a bit of an indie rock slant to them when they were even doing back stuff on Red Scare. That's a little bit more evident now, but it's a band that can carry it. It's not like a weird left turn for them to do. So I don't know, I'm looking forward to this now. I was not earlier, but again, I don't know what the hell happened to this band in my head.
Ricky, what do you think of this?
Yeah, all right. I vaguely remember them being on Red Scare, and then but I never listened to them. I found them because I listened to the Epitaph Winter or Fall sampler, and I wasn't into them with whatever song was on there, and this one I'm not into it. This is like, I want something. John, you see something, you want something that, like, challenges you. This doesn't challenge me. This just makes me, like, sleepy. So I'm not into the Sidekicks. But you know, they're on Epitaph. That's pretty awesome. So
I totally get that. There's something that I find kind of, I guess, like, ethereal about them. Like, they're that I guess if I heard a lot of bands that had this sound, it would completely be tiring to me. But I think this band manages to pull off this kind of, like, high voiced soaring sort of thing where that, I don't know. I it's not something I'm normally a fan of, but these guys seem to do it in a way that I can stomach.
It's not just the voice. It's also, it's like that gloomy-ish, like, guitar sound that they have going here. I just, you know, it wasn't working for me.
I completely back Ricky on this. Yes. Sorry. The Sidekicks, they're a band, I get them mixed up in my head with that band mixtapes, for if you're familiar with them. They're, I think it's just because they're both from Ohio, and they're both kind of like this similar, like, poppy but high, like, high voice. Just, you know, it's like, whatever. I'm not going to hate them. I don't hate them by any means, but I definitely will never, like, buy their album or pay money to see their show. You know, it's like, just, they don't, like Ricky said, they just don't do it for me. They're just not my cup of tea, I guess. But good job for them for doing this thing that they're doing.
John, this cannot be dangerous enough for you.
Man, I'm getting soft, and I don't know. I listen to this, and I'm like, yeah, this ain't that bad. It kind of reminds me of the Pixies. And people love this band. I've seen this band 3 times just because I've gone to see other bands, and I was never blown away, and I wasn't blown away by this, but I'm like, yeah, it's kind of Pixies-ish, man. Like I mean, I would not turn this off if it came on the radio. So I don't know, man. Maybe I'm softening up, you know?
Is Epitaph a good fit for this band, though? I was surprised they got signed to them.
Epitaph is so different than they used to be. I would not be surprised if anyone got signed to Epitaph, honestly. Hmm. I mean, it's like they're, when I think Epitaph now, I think Parkway Drive. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, and Bring Me the Falling Horizon.
In Reverse. It's like, I feel like they see the dollar signs and they sign the bands, and it's like, whatever, I get it, you know, their record label's business, I don't hate on them for it, but I just, it's the same with Victory Records, like, all these labels are the same. They used to be, like, Victory used to be strictly hardcore, and now it's like, you know, they have A Day to Remember and act like that's hardcore, and it's, you know, it's all whatever, so I'm not surprised they're on Epitaph.
All right, well, let's move on here from the Sidekicks. John, what do we got next?
All right, Title Fight. Title Fight is putting out a new record. Title Fight is another, well, not even rising, like, extremely popular band at punknews.org. They've got a new album coming out. It's called Hyperview. It's out February 3 on Anti Records, or Anti Records. They put out a new song and a new video called Chlorine. This is probably, along with Sidekicks, one of the Punk News' readership's most hotly anticipated records of 2015. Did you guys dig this? Are you guys down with Title Fight? Or do you want more energy and womp in your tunes?
Well, I'll go first to kill the awkward silence. I love Title Fight. This song is a little more, or the song that Punk News is streaming, or posted the video of, was a little more, you know, like you were saying, slow and kind of dreary. But, you know, that's just, that still sounds like Title Fight. It's not like they're taking a different direction. They had songs like that, you know, before. And I do prefer the more, like, upbeat, you know, kind of screamy, which I love them because they look like they're so, I mean, they are kids. But they just look like little kids on stage. But they, you know, they have a very, like, Lifetime kind of old, just old school, like, hard, like, post-hardcore, I guess is what you call them, sound. Yeah, I'm a fan. I've always liked them, and I'm a little sad they're not on Side One Dummy anymore. You know, just cause I'm kind of partial. I love Side One, and I kind of always have known them as a Side One band only. So I'll have to check out other anti records, whatever it is bands. But yeah, I like it. It's a little slow, but I can still, you know, I would still listen to this.
Yeah. Anti is just Epitaph's non-Epitaph style band, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's their imprint where they put things like Nico Case and Tom Waits and things like that.
And the Coup, baby, the Coup.
Yeah. So it's a weird label for I guess what's ostensibly a punk band to end up on when Epitaph is there and they could just, you know, perfectly well fit in as an Epitaph band. And whenever there is a band that ends up on Anti, it's usually because, at least in my mind, they're making a conscious choice to disassociate themselves from at least whatever the Epitaph brand represents. Mm. And that's because that's what happened with what's the emo here? The Promise Ring. Because the Promise Ring were on Anti for Woodwater, which was the last record that they released before they stopped being a band in their original form. Also, into that. Non-interestingly, I guess, enough, the only Promise Ring record I've ever heard, the only one that I actually like, and as I understand it, one that doesn't actually sound like a Promise Ring record. So there you go. But anyways, that was on Anti. The Weaker Thens, were they not on Anti for their last record? They were. Yeah, and it's the same sort of thing, I think, where while that's a band that has a lot of like punk rock connections in them, I don't think they wanted to necessarily be seen as an Epitaph band. Like for them, it's a better fit for them to be alongside Nico Case and Tom Waits. Like that's the crowd that they wanted to be in. Title Fights, I don't quite get why they went the Anti route.
I'll tell you why. I'm looking at the Anti roster right now, and I don't necessarily like all these bands, or even most of them, but, you know, Dr. Dog, Rocky Erickson, I do like him, Marianne Faithful, Beth Orton, The Locust, Grinderman, which is, what's his name? What's his name? What is it?
Is that Paul Westerberg's?
No, it's the Australian guy, the crazy guy.
Oh,
Nick Cave.
Nick Cave. Yeah, what's Paul Westerberg's thing that he had? Grandpa Boy or something. Grandpa Man. Grandpa something.
All these bands are respected bands in the critical community. So the reason they're signing them to Anti is when they pitch them, they're exactly like you said, is like they're a more serious band. They're not, you know, screamo, emo core or whatever. That's the exact reason. I can almost guarantee it.
That's it.
I mean, I guarantee you, honestly, like I guarantee you that you know the difference between Epitaph and Anti? You know what the difference is?
What?
2.5 points on Pitchfork. That's the difference.
That said, I listened to this song and I didn't remember it like 4 to 5 seconds after listening to it. And that is sort of the title fight blind spot that I've had my entire life. So, there's a song. You can go listen to it, but I can't hear it, apparently.
Buju Band was on Anti Records. Buju.
He was. Buju had a record that came out where he had Tim and Lars from Rancid guested on it. This was after because he did he recorded a verse in what was the one of the first two songs in Life Won't Wait. It might have been in Life Won't Wait, like the title song on there. Buju was on. So then they were on that Anti release that he put out, and what was the song? No More Misty Days was the name of the song. There's a lot of Lars in it. It actually works pretty well. I like it.
Yeah, that's a cool. It's on Give Him the Boot 2 as well.
There's a way more kind of like dance hall-y version of it on Buju's record. It's different than the one that's on Give Him the Boot. I don't know now if that record was released on Anti or if that was, or if he did something after that. And this is super interesting to everyone, I'm sure. But now's the part of the show where Adam looks something up on a website.
Buju's a straight up gangster. I mean, like he's an actual gangster. Like a lot of people don't like him because he did Batsy Rider, which was like an anti-gay song, which is kind of lame. But a little while ago, like about 3 years ago, he was arrested for flying bricks of cocaine from Jamaica to America. Buju, who's like the most famous guy in Jamaica. It'd be like if Jay-Z was arrested from flying cocaine from like America to England. It's like insane. So Buju's a pretty bad dude.
Jay-Z is probably flying cocaine around.
Maybe he is. Honestly, I just wanted to talk about Buju. I find him fascinating. Like, I realize he's anti-gay and people hate him, and, you know, it's lame to be anti-gay. But he's a fascinating guy because he's super famous, and he's a very talented dancehall guy. But he's flying cocaine into America. Like he's a multi-millionaire, you know? Anyways, Adam, let's wrap this up.
I guess, yeah. What do we got to talk about now? What's our last one here? I had a list. I can do it here. Okay. Let me talk about this because you're just gonna lose your shit.
I'll go last.
Yeah. So Jello Biafra, who we never talk about on this show, joined the Arno Corps. Arno Corps. I always say corpse.
Me too. It's how I read it. Like whenever I read that word, I say corpse in my brain.
English is a fucking stupid language, you know? Anyways, Jello Biafra joined Arno Corps on stage to play an epic ballsy rendition of Dead Kennedys' 1979 classic California Uber Alice during the latter's show at Slim's in San Francisco on November 28th. Alternative Tentacles, they released the Arno Corps album The Greatest Band of All Time, which was a reissue in 2014. And Punk News spoke with frontman
Holzfeuer.
Holzfeuer. Okay, sure. Anyways, earlier this year. So you can go to Punk News. You can search for Arnold Core. You can find this really cool video of Jello Biafra in which he, you know, bench presses the mic stand to show you how strong he is. And now John's going to talk about it lovingly for a while.
I'll let Ricky and Denise talk about it, and then I'll take the closing word on this. Ricky, what do you think of this?
I thought it was cool. Was it at Slim's? It was at Slim's. That's a yes. I love. I used to love that venue.
Slim's, yeah, man.
Let's see. It was cool. I think my favorite cover of this song with Jello in it is with the Melvins. Mm. The Jelvins one. I forgot. Was that Zeke Howdy?
Zeke Howdy. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, this was very cool.
I think Ricky said it in the true German style. Zeke. Well done, Ricky.
Thank you. So yeah, I thought this was cool. The end.
And now me, right? well, I did also think it was cool. I like Jello. I think that especially for being how old he is, he really, you know, still looks great on stage. Still sounds great. I've obviously haven't seen the Dead Kennedys necessarily. It's, you know, I'm older than Ricky, though, which makes me feel bad saying how old I am. So I'm just going to omit that information. But anyway, I have seen the Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine. Is that what they're called?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think. Yes. Okay. I've seen them live, but they do actually a couple of Dead Kennedys covers, usually in their sets. So it's sort of like seeing the Dead Kennedys. They sound, you know, sound the same with Jello. But yeah, you know, I thought it was cool. I've never been to Slim's, but it's a venue that's kind of, I've heard about, obviously, and it's, if I ever make it to San Francisco, I definitely would love to see a show there. But I love that he's still doing shit, you know. I think that the Dead Kennedys should get back together and do a tour, you know. I mean,
you do know that the not Jello, but the rest of the Dead Kennedys are going to be, they're doing like a few California shows in January.
Yes, but it's without Jello, so that's not the Dead Kennedys. that's my opinion.
I actually would be anti-Dead Kennedys reunion because, honestly, well, Jello and the Melvins is just amazing, and I think it's better than Dead Kennedys. And Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine, I think they're really, really good. But I respect your opinion, Denise. But I would say that this song is actually quite, I don't want to say serendipitous, but fitting, and here's why. When Jello and the Melvins did, they did California Uber Rallies, and Jello does it in, like, a German accent as Arnold Schwarzenegger. So the Melvins version is Jello as Arnold Schwarzenegger instead of Jerry Brown. The whole Arnold Corpse thing is Arnold Corp says that Arnold Schwarzenegger took ancient Alpine tales and brought them to America. According to Arnold Corp, Predator, Terminator 2, all of that stuff is actually an ancient Alpine tale stolen by Arnold Schwarzenegger and brought to America for profit. So, Jello and Arnold Corp doing the Melvins version of California Uber Alles with Jello as Arnold Schwarzenegger is incredibly fitting, and I thought it was super clever, and I loved it, and I thought it was amazing.
Ta-da. I was going to let that linger. So anyways, John likes Dead Kennedys. Newsflash.
And Jello, man. Oh, I mean, I do love the Dead Kennedys, so, but Jello is the man.
Yes, John talks about Jello Biafra and the Melvins. Newsflash. So there we go. We've talked about a bunch of stuff. Do we have any more songs? I don't think we have any more songs today.
Nope.
Because I don't.
Let's just wrap it up, man. Let's just snap it down.
All right. Up,
body bag it, toe tag it.
All right. We're going to end then. So, Mr. Ricky Frankel, thank you for joining me.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
John?
Always a pleasure to be here, Adam.
Denise, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it was fun.
So if anyone wants to email us, you can do that at podcast@punknews.org or you can find us on Twitter at punknews. But, you know, email us is probably the best way to get in touch with regards to this show. So that is about it, I think. So we will see you guys in 7 days.